back for you and get them all back.
No, I wonder
what the hell you did.
32 I stopped and had a pump.
Now, does that work on everybody, though? Because obviously people in prisons and stuff die after 60 days. And so Dick Gregory made it for 80, so he beat, you know, by 20 days the death days of the others and was fine after that. Went for, what, a 100-mile walk
after?
Still
lost weight.
Yeah, he lost weight, but he didn't regain it. So it makes a difference. I know you demonstrated once to us that you put a person on a scale before and after, and by giving them a massage in a particular way, you could put a quarter pound or a half pound on them, or take it off depending on the direction of the massage.
If you had anyone in the room think about a person and on the scale, and that would add weight to them. Yeah, there's this book I just wrote you some chapters from The Return of Phoenix. And they talk about the penal brain, the third eye, and they put that quote from the Bible that unless an eye is clear, then you can see. And they said in autopsy, they're taking people who have been alcoholics, right? And they're trying to see that their penal brain is solid, it's in coarse sand or something, there's some sort of salt in the sand in the third eye. And it's people who are more mystically developed. Anyhow, they asked on about that, so I'll talk to you. So do you think that there's some sort of physiological transmutation of the pineal gland on a physical basis that goes on through years and years of meditation or spiritual devotion?
Yes,
maybe. The thing is, that there a physical basis for clairvoyant sight rather than saying there's something, you know, abstract and mystical, et cetera? Physical organs open.
Yes, no, maybe.
Part of all.
I'm saying you know, yes, no, maybe you may not know what you're talking about.
Hey, what's up?
Here.
Okay?
Bye. They've also discovered that there's a chemical in the pineal gland, the metabolite tetrahormylene. It's very possible who is sending it. Do you think that this could be responsible for many of so-called devotees having spiritual experiences, rather the pineal gland can be because of its own psychedelic psychotropic chemicals for visionary experience?
Yes, yeah, no, maybe. I'm saying you know the answer is yes, no, maybe, it will go on with something. This human body is a result of 144 elements. That's a fact, like it or not. 12 are basic. Four are gases. That equals what? You have 36 radicals. also that current quarter four. We may not like them, but they're essential for our existence. These student writers are very, very unusual in hiding their knowledge in agricultural language. That's why they call it word game. How many openings visible does the body have?
Is that nine, I believe, isn't it?
Nine. They refer to the body as how many gates?
The nine gates. Mm-hmm. Or except, yeah, the nine gates, and then there's the tenth gate, mm-hmm. too, they talk about.
I said you have 36 radicals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
At each of one of those four things, there are four sitting there waiting to come out.
Four times nine.
But they ain't gonna come in until you fall with the chemistry. So you subtract 36 from 144, and what have you got?
Subtract 34 from the
36.
108?
Yeah.
That's an interesting number.
It's rosary, yeah.
Yeah, it's also in it's a rosary both in India, I believe, too.
And it's your amount of repetition of the
code
between you and the creative intelligence called the mantra.
But they're just doing that as a representation of something physiologically, you say.
Yeah. Well, that representation physiologically is valid science in terms of physiology.
Their repetition of it, or just the representation. In other words, are they using it now as some kind of mumbo jumbo technique when it actually represented something different, or are they?
Are you the product of sonics or the product of optics?
Sonics, ultimately.
Then if you have 108, what have you got?
Well, 108.
Word. Radically.
Okay.
And you have 108 that are non-radical. And if you're going to use sonics, are you going to use the sonics on the radicals or the non-radicals to reinforce them against the what?
The non-radical.
No.
Yep.
You reinforce the non-radicals against the radicals.
Against the radicals, that's okay.
Entering the nine openings by your stupidity with your tongue. It's not what you put in your mouth that defiles you, my friend, but what comes out of your mouth makes you the victim of the radical. And this is the theology of the utmost intricate some particle. Because 99% of all disease are the result, and of all healing is placebo. Only 1% is 144 elements of chemistry.
That's a heavy statement.
Well, it's the fire purification having evolved silence. Is that why you need to have long vowel silence? It's a purifying effect.
They are called what, yogis? What does the word yogi mean? Psychophysical synchronicity between talking with yourself and looking. What is the word union?
I think it means in sync with all of
them. Well, I think it also means yoke, so possibly it would be a bond of some sort. With the
all agricultural language to represent what?
Yeah, well, I'm thinking of chemicals. Say,
timing of the chemicals going through on time or too soon, too late, what kind of diseases you have in the body.
Hyper or hypo.
That's all you got, there are pressurized diseases, you know.
But now hyper or hypo diseases, does placebo work on hyper and hypo?
All of them. 99% of the time, all the diseases are controlled by placebo. 1% is chemo.
Because it's the sonics, is what you're saying. The sonics is what the
suggestion. You have to label that thing, and if you label it, you got it.
Hmm.
And the radicals are not labeled because you don't know what the radicals are. But you know what the RNAs are. And every time a radical gains entrance, you lost your immune level, and you set up a transportation.
But the radicals gain entrance by a product of speech, is what you're saying.
Congratulations. You like this. You are your worst best enemy. Lay your tongue in your mouth.
Is there such a thing as good luck and bad luck?
Yes. You see, it's easy to ask questions, but not to pursue a point of issues to the culmination of application. That's what's difficult to pursue.
Mm-hmm.
You ask a question about healing and about the third eye and all these labels, never trying to understand why it's a yes and no, and maybe what is actually involved. I don't know of any third eye, and I never met one. In all my years of living in this mechanism, I only know one thing about its mind. The pineal gland is a lens that provides me with convex vision, so I can see through to the atomic particles minus the use of a microscope or an X-ray machine. You may call me a seer if you like. Or you can get the machine to back up my description atomically, accurately, mathematically, when I describe it to you without the need of the machine. There's no magic. But you live with your concave vision and think you're limited in your society. And go looking for people who have the capacity to see into the future, thinking they're smarter than you. When in actuality, they don't know what the hell is causing their ability to see. It's convex vision. It's not caused by chemistry. It's the result of the ability to focus the pupils so that the chemistry that is set up by the pineal gland interfaces with the pituitary gland to set up the photography. You call it hologramic photography.
When convex vision is a...
You've been around an attacker. Is he functioning on the convex level or the concave level?
Convex.
Yeah. But he doesn't spend the time trying to explain it to people. Why?
It would be difficult to explain.
Yeah. Is that one of the reasons that yogis or folks concentrate on the tip of their nose? Because that's the difference between the pineal and the pituitary. Or they would focus at the front behind the eyes, which would be the same thing as focusing on the front of the nose.
Actually, it never said that. It said that it said the base. It said the end of the nose.
Yeah, I'm saying either. Oh, the root. The root.
The end. That's actually the end of the nose. But people have.
There are those who do this, there are those who focus on this, and there are those who focus 3 inches behind. But does it matter? Either way, does it have the same effect? Well, my question, let me just clarify this. My question before was, when I'm trying to clarify is, are we, what we are attributing to be a spiritual phenomena, mystical spiritual phenomena, is this what you're calling here context? Really, we can explain this physiologically. You don't have to resort to any mystical, abstract explanation a physical capacity that is dormant in man that we can change our own physiology in order to do this. We don't have to wait for some gift from heaven for this. We just change our own physiology and we can perceive it.
In fact, a good addition to that is, where does one end and the other begin, and do they commingle?
My friend, your problem is in the words you speak to yourself. A spiritual person is a practical person moment to moment. A religious person is an impractical moment person and may lead to behave fanatical on the strip. So when you talk of spiritual, you have to define in clear words what you mean spiritual to represent. I know spiritual people are practical people. They're not fanatical. They're not fanatical.
Thank you.
They're very practical. And in terms of practicality, they make things function all the time. Now, impractical people tend to be fanatical because they can't make it function, and they finally end up praying for something for nothing to an invisible God. They will get 1% of that attitude manifest to give them some sense of encouragement. But a spiritual person doesn't do that, because every act he does is already geared to be practical. Now, when you talk of a person who is divine, all you're telling me is someone who has the highest immune level in the body. But nothing can penetrate his immunity. Therefore, he's divine. And no amount of prayer is going to represent immunity. Action represents immunity. Now, a liberated person is not somebody who is intellectual. It's someone who has acted to man performance without question. That person is liberated. You read me an article?
Mm-hmm. By Jack LaLanne about... Yeah, I think he, from that paragraph, that was real interesting.
You'd rather have a what?
He said, I'd rather have, let's see, it says, you can take the positive thinking man, I'll take the positive doing man. It was Jack LaLanne, a real interesting article about how he was a vegetarian for 6 years and he tried these various things. And then he said that he finally, to do the speech, you know, the tugboats and, you know, the 75 tugboats, he swims with his hands and legs bound and swims across the bay with them. Anyway, he says his brain, he made his 70 million cells, he was even talking cellular level, line up to function as how his brain, and he didn't use mind. That was interesting too, Adana. He said brain was going to do the thing. And then, but then as he got towards the conclusion, he said, you can take the positive thinking man, I'll take the positive doing man. And it reminded me of Adana once said a real interesting statement. He said, he was talking about the acronyms for failure and success, and he said, success is a process of living just as failure is a process of thinking.
So failure is a process
of thinking. Which was an interesting...
I told you there is no such thing called mind, but there is a thing called brain. And your brain will save you from the ridiculousness of your mind.
Well, what about yogis like Ramana Maharishi dying of cancer, and it's being a realized person, a divine person, reaching that state, as opposed to being having the highest immune system? Why do they still get diseases and heart attacks and die like everybody else?
When the person is indulged, and the person who does not indulge has the same disease, I don't believe in it.
But then I'll give you an explanation.
Do you start doing that?
No, I don't. Okay. That this is a way of working off the final karma of the disciples, something like that. In fact, that's what Yogananda said about Sri Yukteswarji. He said he became very ill at the end as a way of taking on the karma of the final karma of his immediate disciples. He said that in an autobiography of the yogi.
we can build up all kind of information regarding ourselves and never have the real understanding of what it tells us. So I say, when the man who indulges and the man that don't indulge both have the same disease, I don't believe in them. Something is wrong with their knowledge, and something is wrong with their attitude.
They believe that one becomes and certainly the underlying concept of martyrdom, whether it's an Islamic faith or the Christian faith, achieve salvation through suffering. There's plenty of quotes related to that in the Bible.
Would that
be
explained by the same
people look for pain as an excuse for their salvation. And a lot of people run from pain to get salvation. But to see pain for me is P-A-I-N, P-A-I-N, and P-A-Y-I-N-G. P-A-I-N, I am in my father, like it or not, I'm the sperm that got to come out of my ejaculation. That's the first phase, this engagement of unity. P-A-I-N is the anguish of having to stand on my 2 feet to survive. And P-A-Y-I-N-G is the cost factor of living. So I don't know any pain. No, it's not easy.
That was
that's what I said before. Those who are immune and do all kind of things and still end up with a sickness haven't resolved the truth. The truth is in the word you use to yourself. Spell down. Isn't that man better?
Oh my God.
Let's spell it backwards and see if it's not man better.
Well, I think I in some ways think of both concepts in the same way. If we look at what the Gnostics, the early Christian Gnostics believed, or the esotericists, they believed that the God that created man of this universe was the Old Testament God, and he only created man to suffer and die. And that rather he was a jailkeeper. Well, that was the Gnostic Christian conception in the first 3 centuries. Isn't there just as much, if we look around throughout history, evidence to say that yes, that this was created for man to enjoy this world, as to say that yes, this is created as a hell for man? Depending on our perspective, it's very equal, both are true.
My friend, that is all good conversation, providing you with it. We should all take the next breath. We'll do 2 things with your body. Cremate it or bury it or give it to the partner. Your conversation has no value in terms of actuality of your structure. You can talk around in all circles as when it postulates the universe. But until you come to grips with your structure, you ain't got the darn thing to vulture. And that's the difference between the realized man and the man who believes in the universe. And there's something to gain or lose. The realized man has nothing to lose or gain. He realizes only one thing. That's why it's called no condemnation, only love. But you can't love if you're never given the freedom to love.
But isn't it more just acceptance? I mean, this is the way you're thinking.
No. It's not acceptance. Man is the only creature endowed with the option to love or not to love his creator. Every other creature is forced to love the creator, like it or not, the landowner. His freedom is the creator must be loved at his terms, not at the creator's terms. But you don't know that you have to be none. And that's why the illusion of feeling that pain is necessary for you to gain understanding keeps repeating itself. But it's necessary to go through that illusion to find out once and for all the reason why you're in that frame. It's the love of your own freedom. And not be coerced to love because of the confrontations and problems that will face you. Can you freely love without coercion? Can you truly love this creative process without coercion? Or can you really turn the cheek when somebody hits?
Is that really necessary?
Is that real? That is real. R-W-E-L and R-E-A-L and R-E-L-E.
I mean, sometimes people just don't act like you want to like them. I mean, you know what I mean? It's like you have to like them. I mean, there's real feelings and there's like fooling yourself too. I mean, you know, you can understand that they're just acting like that because they are having a hard time. That doesn't mean I want to go interact with them. What you're saying is that, yeah, you should really live that love in that respect.
The answer is in your script. The man didn't say, pick up my cross and follow me. He said, pick up your own cross and follow me. If it's in your script, that's the scope of your heart to live on, then it will be your triumph and your reward. If it's not, don't envy somebody who is supposed to be able to do it and surprise you, because that's their script. You got your own script. Each one of you are unique. Each one of you is a cosmic Oscar winner.
And the only prize you'll ever get is going up the moon. That's the reward of going through it. Not the reward of trying to analyze it or evade it. It's the reward of going through the script that you've got. I can't take away your script, and I can't exchange it for mine. Neither hers nor his. Each one has his script and is unique. Each one of you are unique. But you don't realize it until you live it. About yourself and not the world. And be thankful that you can understand it, because all you'll ever get out of this whole process as a creative intelligence is understanding via love in a human organism provided to experience the autonomy of free love without coercion. This organism is set up by nature to provide the creative intelligence an opportunity to trust himself from a unified field into a relative field if the objectified creation can be trusted to love him by being in resident in him in total freedom without coercion. Because why? God can unplug you very fast by making you not breathe. And what have you got? And no amount of your coercion is going to make the breath come back. The only thing you can deny God is, okay, keep your breath, I ain't gonna love you. But if you give me my breath back, I'll love you. And if I love you, then you already agreed to take care of me. I didn't ask you to make me. And if you don't take care of me, then it's your fault. I'm not going to love you. But if I love you, then it's up to you to satisfy my needs, not my wants. And I'm entitled to the best because you are me. And I and you, two things equal to the same thing, are themselves equal to one another. And there's no something for nothing. Then the right to love in total freedom is complete divinity. Not something you're striving for, or something you're running away from, or getting rid of. There are no sins to pay for. It is the fact that you're placed in a situation to experience the freedom to love without coercion. So everything else is just a flutter in your head. Seeing into the future and all those things. Fine, the man Paul even went through all that, only to come back to one statement. I rebuke you in your rejoicing, for I live and die daily in the Lord. When a man is living and dying daily, what is happening to his organism as a mechanical movement? He's conscious that he can't control his breath if he doesn't love. So what has he got? To love unconditionally. And that's the very first statement that Jesus made when he said, all the commandments are good, what Moses gave, but I give you a better one. Love the Lord thy God with all of your mind. That's a part of your mind, all. With all your heart, all your strength, all your soul. And on top of that, neighbor as yourself. Now, that is the key to the total reality of non-decomposing organism. The butterfly don't know a doggone thing than to eat his way from caterpillarhood to butterflyhood. So he makes it strictly by doing what? Loving to eat. All I'm offering you is when to eat what, so that you can appreciate your butterflyhood. I don't have a single thing to offer you because it's not mine. I can only refer to you or tell you that the timing takes precedence over what? Because you're already 144 elements, like it or not. Well, you may not appreciate timing till it's pointed out to you. But nobody can make time. And as long as you live in a world of sonics, timing will take predominance in every act until you surrender timing to consciousness. Then consciousness will take dominance over time. So the path of the master, or the return of the soul to its origin, is letting go of time to appreciate consciousness as love that overrides time. It's called sonics. What you say and what you hear overrides the moment of the experience. At the last moment, you can override it by what you see. Things could be very, very bad in your mental version or assessment and the timing, and yet what you see at a critical moment can override it. Mm-hmm. It's a fact. It's not a really, just gotta apply it. A gun and a bullet in the gun doesn't have any more than to press the trigger and it has to go out. All you got to do is be sure where you point the gun is that where you want to go. You point it to your face and press the trigger, that's what you have. You point it away from your face and press the trigger, that's what you have. The creative process is a pragmatic condition. It doesn't have friends or enemies. It simply operates on the basis of pragmatic action.
What do you mean by that? It'll operate anyhow, regardless of if people are there or not there.
No.
It's a blind and
no, it's not.
The universe.
No, it's not. That's one thing that is missing in our understanding. The love to pick the gun up and point it. The love to make the gun, the love to build the bullet, even the object that's going to be hit, the love to receive the bullet. That's what you don't understand.
So why is the love necessary if this is already occurred anyhow by this process?
Because the love,
creating an
the love is the compassion and the forgiveness for every action that you misread in the behavior of the process. The brain is liable to misread and assume that it has been faulted or deprived or made the victim of. Then you didn't have love in the first place, and you don't know what love is at all. But if you go through it, loving it, you may discover something about love that you didn't know it yet.
So if the brain is part of the process, why is it necessary to have compassion if it is?
It's necessary to have compassion in order to forgive when it makes its own mistakes. Otherwise it will not forgive itself, it will destroy itself by being what? Suicidal.
Yes, but is
you say yes, then why do you say no?
What I'm saying is, if the brain is part of the creative process, why does the creative process, and we are part of the creative process, why must the creative process have to forgive itself?
Because it makes mistakes on its own self and would be suicidal to itself. Therefore, it must learn to forgive itself by love. Yeah. Every mistake you made from the time you knew as a child, why didn't you not commit suicide?
I didn't know any better.
You didn't know any better.
You had to go on and suffer.
See the excuses you make. See, we all have to make excuses for the fear of we may think.
That's a label. Excuse is a label,
my friend. It's easy to talk out or not easy to do. If you act what you say, you may be liberated. But because you don't act what you say, we're constrained to fear, frustration, and limitation. Can you act what you say?
How can we be sure of what we're saying? What is it?
I said, can you act what you say?
You can reflect it, I suppose.
No, suppose. Although they're telling me right away, you cannot act what you say.
Do you think if you say it enough times, you're finally acted? I mean, I know, you know, I get tired of that. I believe one way and I'll act another in the crisis of it all.
I respect you and your convictions. You're just telling me you cannot act what you say. And I have to respect you. If you can act what you say, you wouldn't be sitting in this room talking to me either. You'd be out there acting what you say. But therefore I have to respect you. Because you're entitled to evolve through the process. Chicken eggs take 21 days to hatch. Turtle eggs take 90 days to hatch. Dinosaur eggs take 1,000 years to hatch. That's why they're too many wrong. You cannot find it. And human beings hatching out from ignorance into understanding take all life to hatch. And since the business doesn't shut down until midnight eternity, you be my guest.
Take as long as you take.
So I can't reject you or resent you for feeling that you can't act what you say, because no one really is willing to pay the price of acting what they say.
Yeah.
It's like condemning a baby for not being born 5 months instead of 9 months.
That's exactly.
And that presupposes they can see. Is that a presumption?
It's presumption, because how can they presuppose what they're not?
I don't see any givens in the equation, that's all I say. I don't see any givens, any fixed points in it at all.
You said act what you say, not what you do.
You see, you're talking a lot of information you hear from others around you in the last 33 years. You haven't told me a single thing you have applied in your statements about yourself in a short period of time. It's when you apply it, you know for sure, without doubt. And the man, when he called me and told me something over the phone, he's reading of a man who has struggled with that kind of understanding to finally make a public statement. And I want you to repeat it again, what type of man is valid versus what type of man is not valid.
The doing man.
The man that does, not the man that thinks.
Apparently for him to come to that statement, he had to go through his own...
You bet he went through a lot of...
I did find some more
maturity of being before he could ever make a statement like that. Let alone come to the realization that the brain... Because when you were at the school, and I was telling you those days, mind don't exist. Brain exists, and the brain will save you from all your illusions. It didn't mean anything. But when other people who have proven themselves in the financial world and the acceptance of their fair peers can get up and openly state for the first time where the real facts are about health and being it, and it coincides with what I've been saying to you, you got something, not me telling you, but sooner or later the whole world is shouting it from personal experience. You've been around Thacker. You met me years ago. You didn't understand convex vision and being exposed to it. When you saw Thacker, you know he lives in convex vision. But he's not going to explain it to you at that level, because why?
You see, that's all relative. He may know that, but I see Thacker, and I have a whole different viewpoint. I see Thacker differently. He sees it differently. Someone else would see it differently.
Right,
so everyone sees it different, according to their
Thacker,
own perception.
Do you understand what convex vision is?
Well, only what you've told me. That's the first time I've heard that concept.
Therefore, you would never recognize it if you ever saw it.
I would only recognize it if I had experienced it like you have. Then I could resonate with what you said. I haven't experienced it in your way, so
I've seen people be exposed to it and couldn't tell the difference, like a gentleman in Bob's one night that you must have blasted for 15 minutes, or that was exposed to convex vision and never, at least I didn't, he didn't let on like he noticed anything.
And even in this case, too,
of course. I never even noticed it.
When you live in a fixation, my friend, you don't recognize truth that is obviously in front of you until you pay the price of what they call suffering. And then you wake up, oh my God, that's what I've missed out all these years. I've been looking at it on the planet.
And we all have that at times, if it isn't obvious, and if it is the truth.
In fact, it may be a saturation thing, because at first, when I was first exposed to it, about almost 10 years ago now, I didn't recognize it until one day when I saw it, and I thought, you're going cuckoo in the head, because what you saw wasn't there, and couldn't be there, and isn't there, so just, you know, figure out what that is, and you better get a shrink to find out what's going on. And anyway, then when I could see it, or experience it, I don't even know if those scenes seem to know, it is part of the process, but I think I could, it could probably be experienced even without seeing. Could it? Yeah, I'm sure it could. In fact, I know it could.
How are you defining context?
It's... You experience it.
The radiant light.
He's had. I mean, I've had my experience compared to him, apparently. So he caught on faster than I did. And the last time, strangely enough, that I experienced it. In fact, this is unusual. You once said that it could be experienced in a child, without the sense of guilt, because you didn't realize that you didn't feel like you were being looked through like glass, which it feels like. A child came into the store, got an ice cream, and must have been about 2 years old. And unexpectedly, he looked at me, so I remembered something like that, so I look at this child. Now, usually children look away, but this little fella nailed me. And I was amazed. I mean, he just did me real good. And so apparently, I don't know if all children have it or how many, but when they fix your vision, they can have it, because it was definitely it.
Every child is born with it up to the moment before sodium chloride enters the saliva.
But this one got by later. I mean, he was on his feet, Adonal, but I would say he could be too. Why would he retain it? And obviously he was being fed. I mean, the food was certainly not part of the equation, as at least not the food that he was taking at the particular time, or that had been accustomed to. What, the child also had a very, I mean, it was very, for the first thing, a child holding your gaze like that and just locking in for minutes without, usually they get embarrassed at an adult doing that, or they'll giggle or something. But a very serious expression, and he just sat there and nailed me, and I had to look away.
Because if you had the comic confrontation or the supportive confrontation.
There was no conversation spoken. That's an interesting thing. If there was no since if the communication was going on at a supersonic level, perhaps, he was probably... Well, I acknowledged him first, but then the conversation was definitely, I was the receiver. So in that case, it was a spermal confrontation.
You come back.
Hmm?
You come back. I'm asking if I have opportunities to do the research, unless you can come to spermal confrontation or comic confrontation. Otherwise, what I say is going to jump. But I'll do your work with it, and then in your own personal life, when you can vouch for the difference. The school is not of the room. The cosmos is the university. And the teacher is not in some building across the room. It's in G-U-R-U. And U-R-U-G. We have to wipe off a lot of dirt after U-R-U-G. Appreciate the G-U-R-U. Then you may take a trip to nebulousness called flying carpet. But you have to live with it. You have to run into them. You have to work with the physiology. Come to grips with the processes and give yourself time. Because what you're going to work with and the research and the tools will not exist in books. They exist already in the frame. And they find you, you don't find them. That's what's so interesting about the research program.
Say that again?
They find you. You don't find them. Formal confrontation will find you. Karmic confrontation will find you. Because the unresolved process has to resolve itself while you're both alive. So, if Cain think he got away from Abel, he was mistaken. You can be looking at it and will not understand it, but you only can feel something going on and don't understand what is going on. What is going on? It's an amazing process. You can't explain it. Very few people are fortunate to be exposed to it. But those who are exposed to it, sometimes they don't even comprehend the process until they're able to work with it. And when they work with it, then suddenly it becomes obvious that something is occurring in the presence of that person. That is, there is an unusual awareness occurring at different levels of person.
Well, I've had that many times with children. Mm-hmm. And children of the age that he's mentioned, it happens to be in supermarkets when they're sitting in shopping carts. And I'll walk along and all of a sudden we walk in. And the mother has no idea. But I'm looking at a soul. It's soul to soul. And I can feel it, but I don't feel a confrontation with that. It's just an interchange. But it's always unblinking, you know. And it can be an infant or a 2-year-old. That's the only place I think I've experienced that. But I knew it was something, but I didn't know what to call it. It usually feels like a love exchange, but not in a sense of physical or maternal or that. It's a much higher.
That's why they call it Dasha. That's the oriental terminology for communication. really awesome.
One child, I'll never forget, had violet eyes. I mean violet.
No, didn't he not see? Unless you become like one of these, you can't enter the kingdom, huh?
And one child was so tiny, it's like you have an intellectual thing. One child was so tiny, it was a little baby, and he was sort of sleeping, and his head way over, you know? Yeah. So he kind of woke up, and he looked at me. I was just going by, so I went, like that. And he started to laugh. Now, he was too young to laugh. And he started to laugh, and his mother came over, and I could tell he wanted to tell her what happened. Yeah. And then so we looked at each other, he and I just winked at him and I went on. But it was this tremendous mature exchange, you see, with this instant. But I made a joke with him and he appreciated it. It was just amazing.
That's basically what you did.
Yeah.
That's why Jesus said, those that have eyes to see, let them see. And ears to hear, let them hear. Many of us have eyes and can't see. Let alone have ears to hear, can't hear. And if you could see, and it is there, and if you do hear, it's there, you got it made.
So it's the purity of the child, isn't it? I mean, that stage.
You are recognizing something in the child that normally is not recognized by others.
I know they never seem like children, and I never treat children like children either.
Well, that's great if you have the exposure. It doesn't make you superior than the others. All people who have the opportunity to experience the convict vision and live in it realize only one thing. God became them. They'll never become God. And so the searching for God is over. And the enjoyment of God is all there is. Not somebody sitting on a throne in some antiseptic corner of the universe. But it's embodied in your voice. So whatever you say from that moment you have to act, it's like it or not. Person talks to you first, it's karmic. If a young person talks to you, it's karma. There are no guessworks. It's all laws of physics.
It's first.
If an older person speaks to you first, it's karmic. If a younger person speaks to you first, it's sperma. You mean to tell me, as a sperm going to an ovum and being born as a winner, you left all the blood behind you? You think you won the race simply by your luckiness? Every crook or hook, every so-called sin in the book, you lived it at that level. And the runner-up was left there to flounder as a winner. But all of you were thrown out without your consent as sperms to go to one ovum. And in the process of the race, as a winner, you made a promise to somebody else. But you cannot talk at that level because there's no verbalization. It's only biological communication. Therefore, the pledge is that the electrical magnetic field, the subatomic particles, they don't get destroyed because they can't destroy matter or energy. So sooner or later, in the time period, your cells will be forced to confront it. The unfinished pledge. So everyone you see around here is either karmic or sperm.
You mean cell of sperm or karmic?
It may be both. It may be both.
An older person is karmic. A younger person is spermal because you have to be in the body in the time ratio to relate to the time lapse of the confrontation. An older person will be there before you came in. And if you're the older person, the younger person comes.